Welcome back. That's a Dive. It's back. The pod is back. The boys are back in town. I can't believe it. That took forever. I'm here with PJ, producer Jorge. I haven't seen you forever. You look beautiful.
Well, thanks.
I mean, what have you been doing? Because I've been a mess.
Traveling the world a little.
You have? That's how you've handled it?
Yeah. I was in France, Chicago, and went to the Tour de France. So had some nice rosé. Some nice cheese, you know.
Yeah,
got to see the world
so
a little
cultured.
Bit. Yeah.
So cultured. I sat in the dark, just crying in the fetal position.
You've let the scruff come out. I like it.
I am. I'm very caveman right now. I look like homeless Giroux right now.
Is it going to stick for opening weekend?
I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see.
To keep everyone on their toes.
Okay. Yeah.
Probably not, but... I mean, it's itchy as hell, and I'll probably get rid of it before the broadcast. I mean, Rebecca's going to give me crap right when she sees me. But I can't believe we're back. This is so good. I'm pumped. Not only are we back, but we're starting the season in a crazy cool way. We're starting in England. We're doing the I Was There. We're doing the Across the Pond, covering the games from the stadiums in England first. Fixture first Friday, which is weird.
Yeah.
One to have a Friday game. And then the weekend. And then it starts. And then we're rolling. And it's just so good to be back. And Tad Potters, we missed you. We missed you desperately. I know you didn't miss us as much as we miss you, but that's okay. To kick things off, we're going to do something fun as we count down the days to the start of the Premier League. How many days do we have?
Three? Today's Tuesday. We're recording this on a Tuesday, and like I said, the season's Friday night football kickoff.
And you're better at math than I am. that's crazy that we're that close. So since we're counting down the days to the start of the season, we're going to do a fun countdown. We're going to do a top six countdown, Casey Kasem style. Do you know who Casey Kasem is? I'm just realizing that might be a bit dated. I mean, I'm an old dude.
Top 40 or something like that.
I can't do an impression. If I could, I would bust one out right now. He was the Seacrest before there was Ryan Seacrest. But we're going to count down. I mean, obviously, there's still a lot to go on in a transfer window. And in a league as hard to predict as the Premier League, top six predictions are pretty futile.
This is the Robbie Musso point of the season where whenever we ask him to make predictions,
he gets furious.
He gets the very caveat. He's like, I want to make sure we reserve the right to make changes after the transfer window.
And I will build in those changes as I list my top six because there's some big deals on the horizon. Let's get started. Top six. Now coming in at number six, Arsenal.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. So Arsenal fans, this is probably the time you want to pause the podcast and send me something cruel on Twitter. Because I'm not optimistic. Now, based on the fact that their last two competitive games, PJ, they won finals and played really well against the champion, against Chelsea. More so the FA Cup final at Wembley, I thought they were incredible. They absolutely played Chelsea off the park. So based on the performances in their last two competitive games, based on the roster they have, the talent they have at their disposal, this sounds like a ridiculous prediction. But based on the way they've played for the last 5 to 7 years, you can't bet on them. You just can't. You can't bet on them. They're coming off of the worst season under Arsene Wenger in his entire tenure. Now, I know that includes a record 7th FA Cup, which I just mentioned, was amazing. And when you watch the performance of Arsenal on that day, you think to yourself, this team should win a Premier League title. This team is good enough to win a Premier League title. And that's where the frustration comes from, is you can't understand why. But as you spend season after season getting burnt by believing in Arsenal, you start to understand what it is about this team. It's the fact that they don't have a winning mentality in terms of a winning mentality over the course of a season. Do they have a cup final winning mentality? Yeah, I mean, they're an excellent team that can go and win a final. But they just, their skill, their composure, their competitiveness it escapes them. It eludes them at the most crucial moment of every single season. So I think that I keep making this case that Arsene Wenger is the only constant. They've tried to address injury issues. They've tried to address the defensive midfield position. And although they haven't entirely gotten that right, I would say that Xhaka finished the season very strongly, started to show what everyone thought he was capable of, even though he had his ups and downs, and his Arsenal career was fits and starts. Elneny, strong at time. Coquelin, strong at time. Now, don't compare this to Patrick Vieira. There aren't any Patrick Vieiras out there, and finding another one should just give up on that pipe dream already. But they addressed that issue, the injury issues. They addressed the fact that they're wide open and don't have a plan for when they don't have the ball. And the latest incarnation of that was the switch to a back three, which happened when we were over there. Remember, we were over there covering the game at Riverside, right? And we didn't even believe it when the reports came out that they were switching to a back three. They did it, and it worked not great in that game, although they did win. But Middlesbrough, who are not an attacking powerhouse, looked like one at times during that game. But they, over the balance of the end of the season, it worked so well, and it looks like it's a perfect fit for them. So they're addressing these issues. Now they have changes to the staff. They've got some people helping out with contracts, not a director of football, so to speak, but some people clawing some of the decisions, some of the power back from Arsene Wenger. The only thing that hasn't changed is Arsene Wenger, and I just don't think he has instilled a winning mentality into this group where there's accountability, where through January, February, they can roll their sleeves up and stay in a title race. And, a microcosm of that right now is there are players, so many players that are going to be out of contract. I mean, forget if Alexis leaves, which is one of the reasons I have them all the way down there, is I think Alexis is going to leave. If Mesut Ozil ends up staying. But there's like seven or eight important key guys to the squad whose contracts are getting ready to expire. And Arsene Wenger, when asked about that, said it's ideal. It's ideal because it'll make them competitive. They'll be working for new contracts. If that's ideal, why do we never see that happen? Why does no other team institute that policy of letting their most influential key players run down their contracts? So I just think that the time to move on from the Arsene Wenger era was this moment, FA Cup final. Actually, I said it the season before, but, hard to blame him. He doesn't want to leave the club. He loves the club. He's been great for the club. And I understand fans that say, well, there aren't a lot of managers out there that are better. And they're absolutely right. But those managers were available. And some of them have moved around to different clubs, and they've missed out on those managers because they won't begin to negotiate or discuss the head coaching job at Arsenal Football Club behind Arsene Wenger's back. Until he says he wants to leave, that discussion doesn't even begin. So I just think that Arsenal constantly looked to me like one of the most talented teams in the league that isn't coached much. And we'll see if that changes. This move to a back three is an old dog learning new tricks. I mean, that's Arsene Wenger just departing from and acquiescing from his strategy, his philosophy, his game plan ever since he's been at Arsenal. But they finished behind Spurs for the first time in 22 years, outside of the top four for the first time since he's been there. I mean, this was a bad season for them. They were nowhere near the title race. And that last gasp, that last straightaway push that typically gets them back into the top four, well, they began that maybe a little bit too late this season, but that can't be good enough for Arsenal anymore. They're too good to settle for sprinting to the finish line to get fourth or third. This team should be winning titles, and I just think that there's issues behind the scenes. And one other issue is I'm hearing that they're bringing in some changes, and one of them is Jens Lehmann, who was a part of a winning mentality, a part of a winning team, who's a bit of a head case, as most goalies are. I love you, goalies, but we know you are. And supposedly he's been rubbing people the wrong way, and he's been trying to hold people accountable, and it's ruffling feathers. Because look at the other ex-Arsenal player, Steve Bould, who sits there like a statue and doesn't say much. That's how you exist in Arsene Wenger's world, is you don't rock the boat.
It's interesting you bring that up, because the question I wanted to ask you is, every season it seems very easy to kind of pick on Wenger a little bit.
Yeah.
And we are critical of the players too. But under Wenger, he also had a bunch – early in his career at Arsenal, he had a lot of strong-minded players like Vieira and Thierry Henry,
Sol Campbell. Yeah.
Keon
and Adams.
It's possible that, he can have strong-minded players that can carry a team to titles. do we need to hold these specific players accountable more this season going into it? Is it time for them to really step up and not put so much of it on Wenger?
Totally. But, you know, I think of two players. There are two star players, Alexis and Mesut Ozil. Arsene Wenger was asked of Mesut Ozil, is he the type of player to handle a leadership role and handle that big responsibility? And Arsene Wenger answered, I don't know. How do you not know that about your own player? Well, I'll answer that. He's not. And everyone knows that about him. Especially, he's world class, but he's not a leader.
Especially a player that's been there for 4 years now.
Yeah.
This is going to be his fifth season.
The player that is capable of that and can step into that role is Alexis, a player they're probably going to lose. And I think of one moment that was crucial that showed me so much about and encapsulates the issue with Arsenal in terms of Arsene Wenger's leadership. Alexis was showing his disdain for and his displeasure and unwillingness to accept mediocre performances through an important part of the season, and was gesticulating, was doing all these things that people didn't like. And what did Arsene Wenger do? Instead of embracing that and saying, yeah, this guy's going to hold people accountable. I mean, he's been in winning locker rooms. He's won things with club and country. Listen to this guy. He shut him down. He put him on the bench for that Liverpool game and embarrassed him, and then brought him in the second half in a game that they needed to win. I mean, that was a crucial part of the season. Mm-hmm. So he tried to quiet and control someone who was trying to do what you're saying, was trying to be one of those leaders of the past. And it's okay if you don't do that as a manager. There are managers that aren't the ones barking that allow their generals to do that in many ways. But I just think if I look at this Arsenal team, what's going to happen is, and let's be fair, there are still many Arsenal fans, and probably the majority of Arsenal fans, that still want Arsene Wenger. It's just the Wenger out brigade has grown season after season. It's as big as it's ever been. It's as loud as it's ever been. And it's a distraction, and it's a powder keg, because they always start a campaign bad. First game, we've got them at Leicester at the Emirates. Mm-hmm. If they lose that game, it's going to start game one.
Yep.
And that's just a bad, toxic environment for players to be in. Now, I don't agree with it. I think fans are disrespectful to Arsene Wenger. They should show him a little more respect for what he's done. But they're fed up. A lot of them are fed up because they know they're better than the results they're achieving in the league season after season.
I've got one quick question before we wrap up on Arsenal. Out of the big six, which is Chelsea, Manchester United, Man City, Tottenham, and Liverpool, including Arsenal, they're the only ones that do not have Champions League football. And we've seen other teams in the past, Leicester, obviously 2 years ago. Chelsea last year weren't in Champions League. Liverpool, 2013-14 season, didn't have Champions League. And Liverpool didn't win the title, but they made a title run. Is that the silver lining of hope you can give Arsenal fans, that they can fully, don't have to worry about the Champions League this season, and they'll fully focus on the Premier League?
No, because like Manchester United, they may need the Europa League. That may become... I don't think they're going to prioritize it Jose Mourinho didn't prioritize it, but he prioritized it once he realized he was nowhere near the title race. But
could he play a weekend squad in the Europa League, at least at the start?
At the beginning, for sure. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I guess one of the things other than FA Cups that he hangs his hat on is a great record getting out of the group, getting it into at least a respectable round of the Champions League. So he won't have that pressure this year, so... Yeah, Arsenal fans, if you've turned it back on and you haven't fast-forwarded to the next team, silver linings, they exist. Hopefully you keep Alexis, you keep Mesut Ozil, and I'm completely wrong, and I will eat crow if they're in a title race. I would love to eat crow with Arsenal in a title race. All right, coming in at number five, another bold prediction.
It's pretty controversial, I think. This might be your most controversial one.
I think it is. Chelsea. So let me start with what I'm sure are the counterarguments that people are screaming on their way to work or walking around campus right now or sitting on the couch or you sitting across from me. Consistency, right? Following up a title campaign, following up a championship, are there many coaches in the world better than Antonio Conte? No. What he did 3 in a row at Juventus was incredible. And in terms of getting good performances out of guys, holding people accountable, keeping a competitive environment, keeping people motivated, there are few better coaches in the world. However, it was a different circumstance at Juventus. He was a legend there. He's become sort of a fast legend at Chelsea, but it's incomparable when the playing side of it is part of it as well. At that time where he was able to retain the title three times, other Italian teams were falling off a bit. They weren't strengthening. Some Italian giants were falling down.
AC Milan and Inter Milan were in decline.
So that's not like the climate he has now, where Manchester United are much better this season. Manchester City are much better this season. Spurs haven't strengthened personnel-wise, but they will be as strong as they were last year, even with some difficulties that they're going to have. Liverpool remains to be seen. But Everton, I mean, there are teams all around them that are strengthening. So harder to repeat in the Premier League than it is or it was with Juventus at that time. Not to take anything away from what was an incredible accomplishment there. He hasn't been given the finances that he needed so far. Now, the window's still open. That was the caveat we started with. That's why sometimes these predictions look a little bit foolish. By the time this podcast is over, he may have signed Lewandowski or something insane that no one even thought was possible. But the big signing he's gone after that they're hanging their hat on, Morata, he knows well, hasn't coached him, but recruited him to Juventus before he left. He showed faith in him as a young kid, and Morata's talked a lot about that, saying that I've been desperate to work with him because he's the first coach that showed major faith in me. When Morata left Real Madrid, he was a young player, not getting opportunities. It was Conte that saw a player ready for the big time, a player ready to start. And, ups and downs at Juventus, and then finally didn't get a starting role but was given an important role. I mean, last season, his return was remarkable for Real Madrid, and a very, very difficult team to break into, especially with Benzema and Ronaldo, guys that are always going to be in the 11. His goals per minute, I had read somewhere, was only bested in La Liga by Messi. Now, a lot of that's off the bench, which is a different game, a different world. Doesn't mean you're not going to score when you're a starter. I mean, he is a great, great goal scorer. He has physicality. He's big. He's got a decent amount of pace. He's good in the air. He's great with his feet. He has all these wonderful attributes. My worry with him is he hasn't been a starter, and the move to the Premier League is a different move even for someone who's been starting regularly. So goal return is questionable whether or not he's going to put up the numbers that he was putting up there. Diego Costa got, what, like 20 goals? So to reach that mark is going to be difficult for him. Now, Diego Costa, that saga, crazy. That it was decided now, we found out, all the way back in January. Remember the big blow-up, the training room, or training field blow-up? He wanted to go to China. They said he had a back injury. All these crazy things that we were trying to figure out what was going on. I give Antonio Conte and Chelsea, and Diego Costa, for that matter, a tremendous amount of credit that they kept that quiet. They moved over that speed bump and sped on to the title. Now we found out that what was decided then is we're done with this guy. And now it's been made clear, supposedly in a text message from Antonio Conte to Diego Costa, if that report is accurate, that Costa said, he told me I'm no longer in the plans. So I mentioned Diego Costa because there is a large disparity between these two players in one crucial area, fight. Diego Costa was a beast. He was such a fighter. And when he wasn't scoring goals, which he was doing often, he was fighting for the team. He was fighting for a hopeless ball over the top. He was battling. He was getting in the wars. And some people don't like that about him. Antonio Conte loved that about him.
It was kind of I think you just perfectly described sort of the love-hate relationship Conte had with him, because that's a perfect player that he would want as a striker. But like you were saying, with all the other issues, Conte obviously couldn't deal with that anymore.
Yeah, and he handled them well, and Diego Costa performed for him. It was just, I think, something a little too volatile for Antonio Conte to think he could continue to get out of him what he was getting out of him, especially when Diego Costa had mentioned many times he wanted to go back to Atleti, he wanted to be at Atletico Madrid, and even with the ban, they're still trying to figure out how to make that happen. The big criticism of Morata is the opposite. He's too nice. He's Mr. Nice Guy. He has all these nicknames. Everyone just thinks he's the softest, most gentle big teddy bear. And they don't need that. They need someone who's going to be a bit of a bastard out there, who's gonna claw and fight and try to get goals. And that doesn't come naturally to him. And I think of a player, star player that he played with, and a perfect thing And a story that explains this is Buffon once said to Morata, you can't let people see how much it hurts you. And he was joking to a certain extent, talking about him, you know, shedding some tears after a bad result. But he said, you know, you got to be harder. And he does. He has to be harder. And if it's not Morata, Batshuayi is not ready to be a starter game in and game out. I mean, he's just not the finished product yet. And what's difficult for Morata is you want to get off to a good start. And what's his start? He misses a penalty in the Community Shield. Now, it's a glorified friendly. It's not that big of a deal. But strikers remember that stuff. I mean, that hurts. He could have been not a hero, because his penalty would have just kept things going. But, you know, that hurts. That's a mental thing. And I think of another Spanish striker who was amazing, who scored boatloads of goals before he came with a big price tag, Fernando Torres. He struggled at Chelsea because of the mental side of things, and that started right from the beginning. The profligacy started right at the beginning, where he missed a couple easy chances. So
another one, Roberto Soldado, to throw out there too. Actually, yeah. I actually was thinking of that while you were saying
totally.
That,
yeah. It can get in your head for some of the best strikers in the world. So I think he's going to be good long term. I really rate him. I think he's an excellent striker, but he's going to struggle a bit at the beginning. Matic left. Matic was integral to them. Now I love Bakayoko. I love this guy, but he's young. It's going to take him a bit of time. But at Monaco, you know, these comparisons everyone hates. But Vieira, there's a bit of Vieira in him. He's got this lanky, beautiful glide, where he just sprints by players. He carries the ball so well from a deep midfield position. He can attack. He's disciplined. He can tackle. He's composed. I mean, he is perfect for them to play next to N'Golo Kanté. But again, another one that might take a little bit of time to adjust to the Premier League.
Back to – this is actually kind of a question I have about Kanté too a little bit. But in terms of Morata trying to toughen up and be meaner, I guess. Yeah. Is that something Conte or other teammates can teach him, or is that just something that's never going to change about the way he plays?
I just don't think that's something that changes much. I don't. I think you can get someone to put in a little bit more effort. You know what I mean? You can get someone to like, look at Sergio Aguero, for instance. You know, they've gotten him to press a little bit more. That's something that Pep Guardiola has been all over him about. But Sergio Aguero, you know, he's got a bit of fight already in him. So it was kind of easy to get him, you know, come on, up your energy a little bit. But to get a guy that isn't known to be nasty, get him to just fight and be that way constantly is going to be tough. And he's never going to be a Diego Costa. And that's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about nastiness and stomping on people's feet and throwing elbows and biting and clawing people. Just talking about, I'm going to win this one-on-one battle all day long, and I'm going to tackle defenders. I'm going to do things that are going to help my team when I'm not scoring. Morata's not that guy.
So just to kind of finish up on them, what is it about them right now that keeps them out of your top? Not trying to repeat as champions, but top four. I mean, do they need to improve?
Yeah, they need more players. They need more players. And what worries me about this group, and Antonio Conte said it, There's a mentality issue with some of these players. So the last time they won the title, there was an enormous drop-off. And Antonio Conte even mentioned it. He's thinking about it. He's cognizant of the Mourinho season. He even quoted it and said it. Now, there's extenuating circumstances, Eva Caniero and other things that are highly unlikely. And
we still don't really know the answers to.
Totally. Yeah. And we're not gonna see anything close to that with Antonio Conte's group. Antonio Conte has a level of integrity and respect that Jose Mourinho doesn't tend to show a team, right or wrong. I mean, you can't blame him. He has his own style, and he's a serial winner, so it works for him. But what's going to happen is you're going to see a drop-off in performances based off of a little bit of a hangover after winning the championship.
Yeah.
That's it.
There you go.
I mean, just
hitting
cruising,
the top.
Cruising right along. I'm in mid-season form. Number four. Coming in at number four. I don't even remember what Casey Kasem sounded like. Someone's gotta tweet me with your best Casey Kasem impersonation, because I can't remember. Casey Kasem. Oh, that's awful. All right, I'll move on to number four. Number four, Manchester United. So Manchester United is a tough one, because they've done good business. They've again spent a ton of money. What are they at? Like $200 million or approaching that. I mean, that's what they did last summer. I mean, they're approaching $500 million in two windows. And listen, they're obviously not the only ones spending enormous sums of money, but they're spending well. I like Matic. I think as Carrick ages, he is incredibly important in the middle of the field to unlock Pogba and let Pogba be a little more advanced. As someone that can be disciplined, sit, be a pendulum, be a conduit that they can flow through, someone with a little more physicality, unlike Herrera, who I think has played that role really well when he's asked to sit a little bit deeper. Herrera can be unlocked and move forward a bit more. You know, Mata can play in that system ahead of Matic. Matic gives them what he gave Jose Mourinho. I mean, in the title campaign, not what he gave him the season after, but you know, last year he was so important to Chelsea's run to the title, and still, even though he's approaching 30, still has the ability to play every weekend at that high level, to be an attacking threat through the midfield, to join the back line to the attack, to be disciplined, to sit, to plug, but also set pieces, physicality. Jose Mourinho likes a big, bad team, and he's got one. I mean, two of the guys he recruited are as big and bad as you get.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say real quickly with Matic, you just mentioned it at the end with Chelsea and Mourinho. The very last game actually Mourinho coached was the Leicester game, and that was the one where he brought Matic in as a sub in the second half, and then he subbed him out about 15, 20 minutes later. No injury or anything like that, and he took him out, which is... I mean, you tell me that'd be the most humiliating thing you can do to a player is
it's up there.
Bring him in and then take him out.
He did it to Mata too.
Yeah, that's in the community show last year.
I mean, here's the thing about Jose Mourinho is I'm all over him. I mean, Manchester United fans hate it. I'm all over Jose Mourinho, but in part because it's a little bit of cognitive dissonance. I mean, I've committed to the theory I had when they were hiring Jose Mourinho that it's going to not be the right move, that it will be a failure. Now, people can quote two second-tier titles last year, the League Cup that isn't anyone's priority, and or the Europa League isn't anyone's priority of the echelon or ilk of Manchester United. I mean,
I think he said they won the treble because they won the community shield.
Oh, my
too.
God. So it's like the I mean, Manchester United fans, if you're quoting the treble, if you're saying we won two, three major trophies, you need to take a step back. You need to pump the brakes because that just goes to show the paradigm shift since Sir Alex Ferguson left that Manchester United fans are over the moon about a Europa League title. And Jose Mourinho is such – I mean, he's so smart. He said, you know, this is the one trophy we've never won. Well, the only reason you've never won is you're hardly in that competition. You know, Barcelona have never won it either. Do you think they're super psyched about trying to go out and fill their cabinet with the one elusive trophy out there?
I don't think Messi's losing sleep. No. He's never won the Europa League right now.
So the Europa League was a ticket to Champions League. It always was. Don't get all wrapped up in this glory of bringing home that trophy. And also to do it in a final against a bunch of kids in Ajax that cost about 1/100th of what it cost to construct Manchester United. But again, Jose Mourinho put all his eggs in one basket. He made a huge play, a huge gamble. It paid off, so he deserves credit there. But from the beginning, I thought, stylistically, Manchester United fans aren't going to put up with this. And we saw it last season. It was tough to watch at times, especially in the big games. And you know, to see them play like underdogs against Ajax in a Europa League final, fine. It worked out. You got a trophy. But to see him do it, you know, during the Premier League campaign, I mean, Manchester United fans had to watch 15 draws last season, which is the most in Manchester United's Premier League history. But the worst part is they had to watch 10 of them at Old Trafford, which is the second most ever in the history of the club. They had to watch just a team that was void of all of the beauty and flow and irreverence and attacking intent that Manchester United teams have had in the past. And one of the reasons they were willing to stomach it is coming off of Louis van Gaal, it does feel more attacking-minded. He has improved them from what was, in essence, watching paint dry. I mean, it was so difficult to watch Louis van Gaal's controlled, robotic, languid, just glacial Manchester United. So the trophies papered over what was a really, really disappointing Premier League campaign. And don't tell me for a second that Europa League got in the way. The only reason it got in the way is because the Premier League was so far off. I mean, how many points did they finish off of Chelsea? Like 20, 24, 25?
Yeah,
I mean, it was a ton. And granted, some of that was the last few games of the season. They did phone in as they were prepping for some big Europa League games, but they were nowhere near the title race. Since Sir Alex Ferguson left, they've been nowhere near a title race. So are they going to be better this season than last season? Yeah, which is why I have them in the top four. And most people do have them in the top four, but I don't have them in a title race this year because two things. One is Jose Mourinho's coming off of the worst coaching season he's ever had with that Chelsea debacle. I mean, that's as bad as it has ever got. And one of the things that he benefits from when he blows a team up is he leaves the country, leaves the league, and goes to a new challenge. I mean, he's stayed hours from the crash site at Chelsea. He had to sit there, not only be around that failure, but watch the resurgence, watch the renaissance under a new manager as they went towards the title with almost an identical team, save for a couple of really important signings. So that scarred him. I really do. As experienced as he is, I think that experience scarred him. And then add to it, this is the hardest job he's ever had. Yes, it's Manchester United, the most expensive and most valuable club in the world, but a club really struggling to get back to the heights, a club struggling with the ghost of Sir Alex Ferguson past. And I'm with a lot of Manchester United fans that say, forget comparing us to Sir Alex Ferguson. That's over. It's done. And it is. I mean, everyone keeps going back there, and I know I'm going back there now. But they're not getting back to that. I mean, they're not going to be as dominant again as they were under Sir Alex Ferguson. Not only has Manchester United changed, but the landscape of the Premier League has absolutely changed. I mean, not only has Leicester won a title since Manchester United have, but, you know, Everton's spending $150 to $200 million in a transfer window. I mean, it's getting kind of crazy out there. So I just think that I didn't see anything in the Premier League campaign last year that shows me the addition of Matic and the addition of Lukaku is going to all of a sudden fix what's wrong with this team. They still have defensive issues. De Gea papers over a lot of those. As good as Bailly is, there's no consistent partner for him. Rojo's coming back from injury. They still don't have left back figured out. Defensive midfield, Matic, they're trying to figure that out. Lindelof is struggling through preseason. He doesn't look like he's going to hit the ground running with Manchester United. Lukaku is a great goal scorer, but so is Zlatan Ibrahimovic. I mean, Lukaku gives them something completely different. With Ibrahimovic, they didn't have the pace in behind. They weren't strong and physical on the counterattack like they're going to be this year. They're going to look much more like a Jose Mourinho team, as good as Zlatan was, with Lukaku. And also, they struggled against the lower sides last year. I mean, those are the games where that really, a lot of those draws were games where they had a lot of chances, didn't bury them. And a powerful guy like Lukaku, a lot of people call him a flat-track bully because he's good at racking up goals against those smaller teams. So they will be better this year. I'm just not ready to put him in a title race.
I understand that. The one player I want to specifically ask, and I think a lot of people got excited for this player in particular for when Matic came in, is Paul Pogba.
Yeah.
Do you expect to see a much improved Paul Pogba this season?
Yeah.
And if so, where does he need to play, or how does Mourinho need to play him?
Yeah. It's hard to gauge performances off of preseason results and individual performances. You can only really take a little bit of that. But he's been outstanding in preseason. And in the internationals, I mean, when we saw him, even during the season or through the break, I mean, he looks good. And he finished the season really strong. I think having his buddy Lukaku, they're very close friends. He's got another young player with a huge price tag. Both of them are going to commiserate about the unrealistic and unfair criticism and expectations. You know, they're going to bond. They're going to be a force. Pogba needs freedom. He can't be expected to sit and hold, and Matic will unlock him a bit. I think Pogba is going to have a big year. I do.
Okay.
And that's one of the reasons I have them in the top four, is I think he will. More than Lukaku, honestly, more than Lukaku, I think Pogba will drag them in the direction that they need to go and get them closer to being a Manchester United that they can battle for titles. All right. So I've pissed off Manchester United fans and Arsenal fans.
And Chelsea.
I mean, let's just get those out of the way real quick. I mean, the only three groups of fans, although I'm sure this next group's going to be pissed off at me. Coming in at number three, Spurs. So the first two criticisms of Spurs that you'll see right now, Tottenham haven't strengthened much in the transfer window. That one I don't really care about. I don't think that's important for them as much. I mean, do they need depth? Yeah, they need a bit more depth. They sold Kyle Walker, although one of the reasons they did was Trippier was becoming the first choice option, was being used in the bigger games. Kyle Walker supposedly couldn't play multiple games in a week, which was a ridiculous criticism that I saw lobbed in his direction. That basically was a not-so-veiled suggestion they were going to be getting rid of him pretty soon. Trippier has a much better end product, serves a better ball, obviously doesn't have nowhere near the pace, the range, the ground that he can cover. So they're going to be covered pretty well there, and they've got some young players too that can fill in those roles. I just love the continuity of this group. The fact that they didn't lose players, that they didn't lose Harry Kane, that they didn't lose Dele Alli, that's more important than what they gained. I think this group, what it does is it shows Pochettino believes in them. The continuity is so valuable season after season to have. I mean, they were hardly changed last season as well. You know, who knows about Lamella and some guys that really haven't featured, whether it be injuries or strange situations. You know, Son has come on to be a really big presence for them. There are people on the fringe that are ready to have breakout, blowout performances. Winks and so they are evolving, even though they're not buying and adding. But I just love this group. I honestly think at times last year they were irresistible.
Daniel Levy made the comment that the amount of spending that the other top six clubs is unsustainable, basically.
Yeah.
And so I wonder, is their lack of spending this summer based on what you're saying, that this squad is already good to go? They don't need to make any major changes. Or is there a bigger philosophy that he has in mind looking ahead 5-10 years from now where he thinks all these other clubs are going to overspend and they're going to eventually it's going to come back to bite them? And he's got a longer, more conservative approach to this.
He's thinking like a businessman, and it's not really a business. To a certain extent, look at PSG right now, and look at Manchester City and some of these clubs, what they're doing, what they're spending. They're doing it from a bottomless account. So they're not really balancing the books like Daniel Levy is, or Fenway Sports Group at Liverpool. I mean, they just have a totally different approach. So no, it's not going to hurt these big clubs that they're spending like that. And it's a testament to how good the recruitment has been, the project they've built. I mean, they've spent big on Pochettino. I mean, we shouldn't pretend that they don't spend big, because they did to bring that guy in. They just aren't – that's not their business model. And it's going to hurt them, honestly. I really do. Not in their unwillingness to buy inflated players. I mean, the values have gotten out of control. I mean, 40, 50 million pounds doesn't even get you the finished final top-tier product anymore. I mean, we were just talking about Morata. Morata's still a question mark at that price tag, which is insane. Now, he's a very good striker coming from one of the top three clubs in the world and was scoring goals in the Champions League. So even though it's been a short demonstration of that skill level, that's what those players are going for right now. So hard to blame them, because if Morata's worth what he's worth, what is Harry Kane worth? I mean, holy cow. That guy should be going for 150 million pounds. What he's done season in, season out in one of the most competitive leagues in the world. They've got one of the best strikers out there. It's a striker that money can't buy, and keeping him is important. But what's going to hurt them is the wage structure. They can't keep these guys much longer. Look at Kyle Walker. Kyle Walker is the first example of a Spurs player leaving this amazing project for an obscene weekly wage, a weekly wage that he wasn't going to come close to making at Spurs. So if they want to keep Dele Alli, they want to keep Harry Kane, they want to keep some of these guys, they're going to have to change their wage structure. I'm okay if they want to be the look for value purchases, develop from within. I love that strategy. But if they don't start spending big on wages, they could be in trouble. The one criticism, I said there were two. I don't think the transfer market is one. The other criticism that I think is definitely going to affect them, which is why I don't have them top of the table, is leaving White Hart Lane. Undefeated there last year, and we watched them play. Holy cow. They were just a team possessed at White Hart Lane. That tight pitch, the history of that ground, the proximity of the fans to the field. Wembley hasn't been kind to them. I mean, it's not as if they're just moving to a new stadium. They're moving to a stadium that has its, you know, that has its hold on them a little bit. I mean, listen, I don't think, like some think, it's going to have the sort of effect that will drop them out of the top four. But, you know, if you look at recently, they went 1-1-3 in 5 matches at Wembley last season. That was including that FA Cup semifinal loss, which was a big blow, that 4-2-1.
And then they didn't make it
Chelsea.
Out of the group stage for Champions League.
Yeah, so that those things will lend themselves to a little bit of feeling uncomfortable on that ground. But it's not going to change them drastically. I mean, season ticket holders, those sold out in like July. I mean, they're still going to pack that place. It's not going to be like the issues that West Ham were seeing when they left the Bowling Ground and they went to the London Stadium and it was, you know, 3/4 full. It wasn't all West Ham fans. They didn't know where to sit. The field was so far from the stands and all the other issues that they ran into that created an atmosphere that was not conducive to success or feeling comfortable. It's not going to be anything like that, but it will be uncomfortable. And it will not have the dominant effect it did, because not only will they not feel the bravado and the invincible feeling they felt at White Hart Lane, but teams won't be as intimidated coming there. So both of those will have an effect on their performances this year. One area that's really important, that's just kind of a minor thing, but because he's not a minor player, is Dembele. This guy is so important to this team. I think he's underestimated, undervalued. I honestly think he makes my Premier League 11 every single season. This guy's incredible. He struggled with foot injuries, and supposedly that got corrected. He has surgery in the offseason. He's been playing preseason games. If he's fit all the way through the season, if they have no issues with that guy, that's a huge boost. It really is. So I don't have them in the sort of title. I mean, listen, there's going to be a title race that's more than two teams. So they're in a title race. I just don't see them winning the title because of that handicap that Wembley's going to give them.
So is that's really the only thing you think that's their issue? You don't there's, because based on everything you're saying about the squad, you're impressed. You think everything's good to go. So
totally.
So the stadium makes, so if they were in White Hart Lane, you think they'd win it?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
Really?
I honestly do. Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's the perfect way to put it, is that's the only thing missing. White Hart Lane, and they're not buying that back. So it's a crucial moment for them because they've got to bridge that 10-foot gap from White Hart Lane to the new stadium that they were building. That they don't see White Hart Lane anymore. That new ground is sort of a clock, a ticking clock that they watch every day. It's a little bit more finished. They've got to have a similar team to the one they have now when they open that stadium up, and it's going to be about staying in the top four and changing their wage structure. So Spurs fans probably a little less upset at me, but the only two teams that are going to love me after this top six are coming up. And one, the next one that I'm going to say, because no one really has them this high. I mean, I read through all the preseason articles and the pundit writer predictions and stuff. I found next to no one that had Liverpool in the first two slots, and I've got them at two. Now, let me start with a massive, massive caveat. That is contingent on keeping someone who, as we speak, and I see PJ right now taking a look over at his laptop. Reports are that their little wizard Coutinho has been hooked, has had his head turned by Barcelona, and Barcelona have some cash to spend right now after losing an important player that will open up a massive creative hole that Coutinho will fill so well. Neymar's gone. What is it, 200? What did they end up? What was it at the end of the day?
The release clause was €222 million.
Crazy. So they've got money to spend, and the reports right now, we're getting up close to like 100, 120 million pounds that they're willing to spend.
Yep, it's reaching over, they're saying, you know, depending on bonuses and things like that, it's over 100 million pounds right now.
100 million pounds for Coutinho. If that happens, if Liverpool sell, now their current position, like every position when a star player is trying to be prized away, is absolutely not for sale. No way, no how, not happening. Now, I will say they took the same position with Luis Suarez when Arsenal threw in that absolutely hilarious 40 million plus one bid and Barcelona were sniffing around. They convinced Luis Suarez to stay. They said, give us one more year. We got something special going on. And they did have something special going on. They barely missed out on the title with him. I mean, he stayed. He performed. They ended up selling him and probably selling him for more than they would have the season before. And so they have to keep Coutinho. Honestly, if they can't keep Coutinho, I take them from second all the way down to fifth, and I bump Chelsea into the top four. Everyone slide up a place. That's how big he is to this group. Not only full strength because of how he unlocks the defense, his goal-scoring threat, his acumen, the attention he draws, which frees up Mane, which frees up Firmino, which frees up now Salah, which just turns them into an irresistible attacking force that can break down teams that sit back, which was the major issue for them last season. They were amazing against the teams that opened up. They're amazing against the top six teams because there was space to play. They'd catch them on the counter. They were fast. They were slick. I mean, look at the preseason. What's their best performance? Against Bayern Munich, you know, the one team that completely opened up and showed them no respect. They absolutely pummeled 3-0. So Coutinho is integral to fixing that problem, as he did towards the end of the season. But also, Lallana's hurt for the first 2 or 3 months of the season with a muscle injury. Salah, as good as he's looked in preseason, will take time to kind of get going. Sturridge can't be dependable. You know, his injuries, he scored the third goal in that Bayern Munich game, a beautiful chip, and immediately grabbed his hip flexor and had to go out. So losing Coutinho at this point, even if it's for an enormous sum of money, they just don't have the time to replace him, and the player doesn't exist. I mean, there's no available player. I mean, Dembele maybe at Borussia Dortmund, who's supposedly getting ready to be sold, but to Barca as well.
So they're just going to get both of them.
I mean, imagine selling Neymar and you get friggin' Coutinho and Dembele. I'd do that all day long. So it hinges big time on that.
I'm curious too. You brought up the how well they played against the top teams, but then they struggled when we saw them play the mid table or low, you know, end of, or bottom of the table in the Premier League. What have they done anything differently so far this off season to improve that you can tell?
They've tried to, yeah, tried to.
I mean, the Virgil van Dijk rumors are still swirling.
Yeah, which they might still get him. You know, they got charged for tapping up Virgil van Dijk. Southampton were not happy about that, reported them. They withdrew. They stepped away. No charges were brought, and everything kind of went quiet. Virgil van Dijk now has turned in a transfer request officially. He's made the statement himself, so it's not speculation. He has turned in a transfer request. Liverpool absolutely will be in there for him. He will help their defensive issues. But, to tell you the truth, I was growing on – Matip and Lovren were growing on me. Liverpool fans will snicker right now because Lovren is just the perpetual joke. But the – they were growing on me as a pair a little bit. Henderson's healthy. That foot injury, although not like Dembele, he didn't fix it with surgery. Supposedly it's doing much better. He was really, really good before he got hurt. And then people want to say that's not his position, that's not his role, he's not consistent enough there. I don't buy it. I thought he was excellent there. Emre Can needed to fill in a bit. A big loss, even though most people won't think it because he's been linked with a move away from the club for 7 years now, is Lucas. I mean, Lucas was the one that would fill in at defensive midfield, fill in at center back. Yeah. I mean, he was the all-purpose guy that gave them depth. To battle on multiple fronts is going to be difficult for a team that's a bit light. One area that they have finally gotten a player is Robertson. They got a left back. Although Klopp said, that's another one Liverpool fans are going to snicker at, that Moreno's like a new signing. That old, a new signing quote. And to be fair, against Bayern Munich, he did look good. So if he's back in the mix, that means Milner is now free and available to be a midfield presence to fill in as Lucas Leiva did from time to time. Was it the Red Bull player that they were trying to get?
Naby Keita.
Keita, yeah. So they missed out on Keita. That was going to be big. That would have given them depth and a great position that would have strengthened them. But I think towards the end of things, Mignolet got better. The defensive side of things did improve. And here's the other thing with Klopp. You always see gradual improvement with his teams. Go back to Borussia Dortmund when he first got there. I think they were like 14th or something the season before he took over. They were 6th that next year. Then I think they were 5th or something like that. I mean, he moved them immediately up. And then the next two seasons, first. Now, people will say, yeah, but that's a different league. You're only really watching out for one team. But to be better than Bayern Munich over the balance of a season, I promise you, is no easy task, especially with the group that he had. So progress should be expected with this team. They've gotten better defensively. They've gone from like a plus 13 or 14 goal difference to a plus 36 goal difference from two seasons ago to last season. So they improved the goal scoring. They improved defensively. Even though there's still cracks in the armor, they're headed in that direction.
Do you think when he took the Liverpool job, though, that he was expected to take this long to build like it did at Dortmund? Did he think, maybe I'm coming to Liverpool, it's supposed to be one of the biggest clubs in England, I'm going to have a lot more resources at my disposal, and he thought maybe I could do this a lot quicker, I could maybe challenge for the title? And I just wonder, you know, if Coutinho goes, and like you mentioned, the Keita deal looks like it's most likely not going to happen at this point, and we still don't know about Van Dijk. If he doesn't get the players he needs and is unable to hold on to the players that he has, could this potentially lead to some issues long-term down the road with Klopp, where he might say, you know what, I can't win here?
Think about when they sold Suarez. Even though that big windfall, it took the wind out of their sails. And just selling Coutinho right now is such a bad idea. Because let's say they get 100, 120 million pounds for him. They're going to miss out on Champions League. So let's say next season they only got 60, 70 million pounds. I mean, the nexus, I mean, with Champions League money, with attracting talent when he's going to leave. I mean, that was the thing, is Luis Suarez at least left them with Champions League and other things. And that still was difficult to rebuild after losing such a starred player, losing a talisman like that. So I just don't – I think tell Coutinho one more season, my man. Even pre-negotiate with Barcelona. You know, they'll stick around. There aren't many players like Coutinho that are going to be available next season either. So just say, like, here's the clause. I mean, you know, we'll negotiate it with them right now. You know, they have the right to refuse this. We'll agree with it. Just give us one more season, because they're close to something. I really think they're close to something, and losing Coutinho will be devastating for them. So, I mean, I'm higher on Liverpool than most, but obviously it hinges on keeping that brilliant little Brazilian. Which brings me to, I mean, you guys can do the... You could do the math. There's one team that I have not discussed who's not finishing seven or below. It's the team that spent more than Brighton spent on their new stadium back in the day. They've spent more than that on two fullbacks. I mean, they just absolutely broke the bank to replace the one area that for me was the difference between them being a title contender last season and them just sort of capitulating in predictable circumstance. And it was the back line. It was the back line. I mean, you know, Pep bemoaned during the season their inability to score goals. And it was almost laughable, because I remember him doing that in the Champions League when they were knocked out and they had scored six over two legs, you know, and he had a team that attacking-wise, yeah, there were games where they created tons of chances, where they should have punished teams, where they should have seen teams out. I remember, you know, there were a couple big high-profile profile games. Was there one against Spurs that De Bruyne missed a sitter, and then Spurs...
Chelsea.
Or against Chelsea, that's right. Against Chelsea.
I think that was the defining match of the season, because after that, Chelsea just ran away with the title at that point.
So, I mean, there were games like that where they had teams on the ropes and didn't bury them. But if they were just a bit more balanced, if they had fullbacks that understood and were capable of playing the way that he wanted to play, if he had Vincent Kompany healthy more often, they would have been there, thereabouts. And all of those things have been corrected. They have Kyle Walker, who through preseason I'll say it, can't always judge things on preseason, but looks good. He actually, his final product has looked good through preseason, which is the one area I almost never give him credit for. He's going to be obviously a much better option than Navas or Fernandinho or some of the other guys he's tried to get to play that role. Whether it's, you know, I mean, who's it going to be on the left? It's going to probably be Mendy.
Yeah,
I mean, Mendy.
Danilo could play there too.
Yeah, so he has options there that are both better than the options he had before, whether it was Clichy or Kolarov. they're going to be a very balanced attacking team. They're going to have Gundogan back. He's nearing a return. And even though he's coming off of a ton of injuries, he was coming off a ton of injuries when he was excellent through the stretch before he just did this ACL. So if it was his first major injury, I might be worried that he can't reach the height that he was able to reach before. But this guy's proved that he can come back from anything. So he was crucial to the balance of that team, especially when eventually they started to rely on Yaya Toure as the lone holder in many games.
He was great.
I had to eat a lot of crow on that one because I was very critical of Yaya Toure. In I think my analogy was playing Yaya Toure as the lone holder is like going swimming in shark-infested waters in a meat suit. But he was so calm and composed in that role. He helped them break high-press situations. He helped balance things. He actually tracked back nicely from time to time. But I really don't think that's the answer throughout the balance of a season. And it wasn't last year. He was used there sparingly. But Gundogan coming back there, the addition of a guy who now there's just so many Silvas to love. I mean, I don't know which Silva is going to be my favorite this year. David Silva tends to be my favorite season after season. But this guy coming from Monaco is special. And what I can't wait to witness is how he gets Aguero,
yep.
Jesus, yeah, Sané, De Bruyne, Sterling,
Gundogan. You mentioned
Gundogan. I mean,
you have Fernandinho and Yaya Toure more defensive.
To get all these guys on the field at the same time, which he's going to try, is going to be something so much fun to watch. But here's the thing: is in Aguero and Jesus, he has a legitimate, like the last time. Last couple times Manchester City have won the title, there were two capable and confident goal scorers that were proven Premier League goal scorers. Now everyone's going to say Jesus hasn't been there very long, but the little time that he has been there, boy, his return was good. I mean, I think I got it written down right here. I mean, he had like 7 and 10. Unfortunate injury, derailed him, and then Aguero was lights out. Aguero went 9 goals in his final 12 games. I mean, to have those guys at your disposal, and I think more often than not, Jesus is going to be who he goes for, but he can play both of them together, which will be so much fun to watch.
Yeah, that's what we saw towards the end of the season when Jesus did come back from that injury. That does kind of, going along with all these options he has, I think part of the reason Aguero finished so strongly was because Jesus had taken that spot from him. We saw Aguero drop to the bench for a few games, and then Jesus was injured. Aguero came back in, and he kind of stayed there. So that's the big issue I wonder. He's got so many of these guys that are all very talented. There's no way he can play all of them. Well, maybe he can, but maybe he starts playing some of them as wingbacks like we've seen before.
Yeah.
So are we going to see issues with some of the personalities here down the road where they could cause some problems?
I don't think so, because he had the same thing at Barcelona. I mean, he could have fielded two teams that could compete in Champions League when he was at Barcelona. So Pep, look at Aguero last year. I mean, Aguero, who is the man who scored one of the best goals, most memorable goals, and most important goals in Premier League history, was asked to kind of step aside for an unproven young guy, unproven not in world soccer. I mean, we saw what he did in Brazil and what he did with the Brazilian national team, but he was a newcomer who was unproven in the Premier League, and Sergio Aguero, completely fit, was asked to step aside so that this young kid could take a crack at it, and he did it no issue. I just mentioned it. 9 goals in his final 12 games. Aguero sucked it up. He performed. Sterling's going to suck it up. He's going to perform. Sané's a young guy. He's going to suck it up and perform. They've got a lot. They're going to be competing on a lot of fronts. So there's going to be plenty of games to spread it around. I just look at last season, and I thought there was this obstinance from Pep Guardiola, the stubbornness to just not change that hurt him. That definitely hurt him because he wanted to prove that he didn't have to change things, that he could still bet out of the back, that he could play Bravo, that it was all going to be fine. And he definitely lessened his position in many ways. He made a goalkeeper change. He started playing direct in certain games. So he showed that he's willing to change tactically to mitigate some of their weaknesses, but they don't have those weaknesses this year. I mean, they are a balanced team out of the back. They played a back three at times during preseason, and John Stones played with Kompany, and Kompany makes the back line so much better, and he's played a lot of games, and he's stayed healthy. Now, the Premier League campaign will be a different story, but if they can keep him fit, he and Stones, I think, are going to be a great partnership. And actually, when they played together before and it was a catastrophe, it was Company in the middle of a back three and Stones to the right. He switched that in preseason and played Stones in the middle, which I like. Let him be quarterback, a la David Luiz at Chelsea. Let him be the one to pick the passes and let Company be free to be a guy that can pressure and win the ball away from the back line, not have to be the one constantly sitting protecting. I just see them much more balanced. Otamendi's not hitting the ground in ridiculous challenges like he used to. He's proved he's more capable and more confident on the ball in the back. Their wingbacks are going to be attacking threats that can cover and get back. I mean, they've fixed so many of the issues that really undercut them last season. So that, in combination with an attacking side that's unparalleled, save for maybe Arsenal, which shows you, goes back to how ridiculous some people might think my Arsenal prediction is, but how ridiculous Arsenal are that they can't be in a title race with all that talent. I mean, Manchester City are loaded with attacking talent.
So you just went over to with the center backs, because that's the one area they didn't specifically address in terms of their new signings. So you feel comfortable with Company, Otamendi, and Stones going into the season.
Yeah.
You mentioned Company's injury issues. The other, so if you have any, I'm just curious if you think they need to sign another one just to
they're
be
trying
safe.
To. Yeah, they do. Because you know, the guys that Denier or Mangala or, you know, other guys that have proven they can't step into that role. I mean, that's who they're going to have to count on, unless he gets creative, which he may. You know, he's played center midfielders at center back. Fernandinho showed up at center back from time to time, so he could do that as well.
He played Yaya Toure at center back in the 2009 Champions League final. Yeah. I don't know if he's going to go that route. I'm still kind of. I would be interested to see Yaya.
That's too far a throwback, I think, at this point. but he's got options. Danilo can play in a back three. I mean, he can do certain things. But they're still trying to buy another center back, which is hilarious because they've already spent $170 million on defenders. Yeah. But they had to. They absolutely had to. And then the one defender I haven't mentioned is Ederson. $45 million from Benfica went to $45 million from Benfica. They went and got a young goalkeeper who is just as good with his feet as Bravo, but has proved in his career in Portugal, but also in the short time we've seen him with Manchester City in preseason, he's more decisive off his line. He's come up with some big saves. He seems a little more composed and just as good with his feet and a little better with his hands.
So you think he might be the starter eventually?
I think so. Yeah, I think he's going to be a starter right away.
You think he'll start opening on Saturday?
Yeah, I think so.
Because that was going to be my last question about them is Joe Hart's on loan again. Willie Caballero just left to go to Chelsea for a free transfer. So if either of those two start to struggle like Bravo did last season, there's going to be a lot of criticism coming Pep Guardiola's way again.
But they're not going to be as exposed as Bravo was. Bravo was so exposed, and you know, listen, with Chile and. The guy proved he's a good goalkeeper. I couldn't handle the criticism that this guy's not good enough. He's good enough. He just came into a situation where he didn't perform right away and the pressure got to him and, you know, he just couldn't recover. But Manchester City will recover. I think they'll win the title. I think Pep's going to show why everyone thinks he's the best manager in the world. There it is. That's it. So the only thing left to do is start this thing. Tad Potters, who's ready?
I'm definitely ready.
I'm definitely ready. So stick with us. We're back. The Tad Pod's back. We missed you guys. Don't miss it. You won't. I know you won't. But Friday, we kick it all off at the Emirates. We're going to be there for Arsenal-Leicester. And then the weekend continues. The madness continues. It all begins. Oh, it's so good to be back. Good to not hear your voice, but know you're out there. And remember, Tad Podders, stay on your feet.